49% of the U.S. population is fully vaccinated against COVID-19, but the rate of new vaccinations is slowing and cases are rising as the more contagious Delta variant spreads. The Surgeon General's office says that's due in part to misinformation about the virus and the vaccines. An advisory released last week called misinformation an urgent public health threat. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy said social media platforms are partly responsible for a lot of that misleading info and should take more action against users who spread it.
Now, health misinformation didn't start with COVID-19. What's different now, though, is this speed and scale at which health misinformation is spreading. Modern technology companies have enabled misinformation to poison our information environment with little accountability to their users.
President Biden and Dr. Anthony Fauci both echoed those comments over the weekend, but Facebook says the White House is looking for scapegoats after they say praising the company's efforts behind closed doors. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think that social media platforms should do more to take down inaccurate or misleading posts about COVID-19 and vaccines, or at least to make them be served up less to users? Do you think it's right for the government to put pressure on companies to do something like that? Have you noticed misinformation about COVID-19 maybe driving the health decisions of people close to you? Have you ever felt unsure about what sources to trust when you're online yourself? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Vish Vishwanath is a professor of health communication in the Department of Social and Behavioral Sciences at Harvard University's T.H. Chan School of Public Health. He's founding director of the Enhancing Communications for Health Outcomes Laboratory at the Dana-Farber Harvard Cancer Center. Vish, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Well, we heard there the Surgeon General, Vish, saying, yeah, we've had misinformation about health before, but it's something's different now with the technology, with the social media platforms that allows it to really mushroom and spread. Do you think there's something to that?
Absolutely. I think, you know, misinformation is very, you know, as old as information or rumors. And in fact, you know, we used to talk about snake oil salesmen, you know, so a long time ago. So it's nothing new. There have always been, misstatement of facts and a misunderstanding of factual information, but also spreading, folklore as facts and science. So that is itself, by itself, is not new, but it is absolutely correct that the Surgeon General said, the scale and the speed, you know, what we call as velocity, with which it is spreading, and it has spread, is unusual, I think. We have not seen anything like this before.
Now, part of this is that once we are interested in something, social media and other platforms can funnel it to us. If I watch a certain kind of music video on YouTube, it's going to suggest more of that kind of music to me. If somebody looks at some misinformation about, say, COVID-19, the algorithm is going to keep serving up more stuff like that. Is this just a kind of a runaway train once people start down this path?
So some people have actually characterized it as such, you know. So once you go into something, it's a rabbit hole, and then it feeds you more of what you are looking for. There is certainly a lot of truth to that. I think, you know, sometimes some have said even the social media don't understand the algorithms that they have spawned, you know. So I think that amplifies and reinforces what you are interested in, and if you are interested in conspiracy theories, and that's you are much more likely to be fed conspiracy theories. But there is another element that is often forgotten in this discussion, which is it can be even more potent from a misinformation point of view when offline and online sources work together. What I mean by that is if somebody from offline picks it up, say a very prominent personality, a politician or a celebrity, and says something about it that is also picked up by other media, and that's what, you know, when the Surgeon General said it's an ecosystem, that's what happens. You know, somebody can pick it up from online, and then amplify it, and then it becomes kind of a spiral of amplification, polluting the entire environment, information environment.
Now, here are with the president, other members of the White House, the Surgeon General saying, hey, Facebook and other social media platforms, we'd like to see you do something to take the most egregious offenders and mute their messages, at least some. And other people looking at that kind of uncomfortably saying, wait, do we want our leaders putting pressure to limit communication on different elements of media? What do you think of that that debate and that call from the White House?
So it's a difficult dilemma, Rob. If you think about it, you know, what can we do about it, right? I mean, that's the question. We all recognize, even the social media platforms themselves recognize that there is a tremendous amount of misinformation out there, that they have contributed to it. And in fact, some of them are doing a lot to check it as much as possible. So they recognize it. The political system and policy makers recognize it. Some of us who are working on this in research recognize it. But something has to be done. And this is where I think, you know, a honest, open debate is essential. Now, those of us who have been trained in appreciating and freedom of expression and having government does not having, you know, with a desire that government does not interfere with free expression, are certainly uncomfortable with it. And we don't want the government to come in and tell us, you know, or tell anybody, you know, what to do or how to think and how to express themselves, especially in our country where we value this kind of autonomy and freedom. At the same time, we are in a very different situation here, and the social media have to come forward and take responsibility for it. And given their reluctance, in addressing this, and you know, these questions come up, I think. So my position is certainly there is certain amount of discomfort in doing this, mm-hmm. but at the same time, social media have to acknowledge and do much more than they are doing in addressing the misinformation.
Vish Viswanath is with us from Harvard School of Public Health. We're talking about misinformation about COVID-19 and vaccines, why it spreads so quickly, what, if anything, could be done about it. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think that social media platforms should block people who share a lot of mis or disinformation about COVID, or at least throttle down on how quickly those messages get shared? Do you see a lot of bad info out there, or has it affected someone maybe close to you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Vish, let's flip things around. Instead of looking at how to stop the bad info, how about how to spread the right info? It seems like we got a pretty simple message here. Vaccines seem to be working really well. People who are not vaccinated are disproportionately represented in new cases and new hospitalizations for COVID. How do we get the good message through and out there and competing successfully with the bad stuff?
Sure. So this is not rocket science, as they say. You know, we know this. We have done this before in the form of health campaigns, and we can do it again. We know that people rely on certain credible sources for information. Not everybody is on social media. Not everybody is relying on social media for their information. There are many people, especially the people we work with, you know, racial and ethnic minorities, those we classically call as underserved people from a lower socioeconomic position. A lot of them rely on community leaders within their communities. My pastor, my church leader, elder, or my priest, or the community-based organizations that I go to for my help. Within my communities, those leaders are highly trusted, and it's a really good idea to invest in them in providing that information. We also know that despite the popular impression, scientists and physicians continue to be held in high regard by people. People generally go to their physician. You know, the physician is a first stop at their office. Equipping the physicians and the physician offices and healthcare providers is another way to do this. There are ways to do this very successfully, and we have done it before by identifying who are these credible sources that people rely on, and how can we equip these trusted local leaders and provide them with this information is something we can do.
Now, I know political divides over vaccination efforts go back even before we had vaccination. The earliest smallpox inoculations in the United States to be, there was a political split over them. But it seems like, I don't know, Vish, the partisan divide over this and the way it breaks down over vaccination seems really big. I don't know about unprecedented, but big. How do we overcome that?
So here are some data. Fundamentally, I agree with you. I don't think I have seen this kind of a partisan split before. You know, we have always had vaccination contested. We have always had, especially in times of infections, ideas contested, right? You can even talk about HIV and AIDS. You know, there have been people who questioned whether AIDS is caused by HIV. So that itself is not unusual. But what is unusual in this sense is there's a clear partisan identification with one position or other. Our own data have shown it. Other surveys by Pew Research Centers and others have clearly shown that if you identify with one particular political party, you are much less likely to get vaccinated compared to other political parties. And here, having said that, if you look at the data, what we are finding is it still remains that 65 to 70 to 75% of the people will get vaccination at some point or other. And most of, we are getting closer slowly but steadily. Now, another 15%, and the numbers may vary from survey to survey, another 10-15% may say that they will get it only if they are required to do so. So it's just another 10%, I would say, you know, who say that they will never get the vaccination, you know. So what we need to do is we really need to find this group of people who are in this so-called watchful waiting. Either I will wait it out or I will get it only if it's required, and work with that group. Find out who their leaders are, who they can trust, and make sure that we communicate with them and get them the messages. I think that is the challenge. That's a real challenge, especially when it's being debated, even within the Republican Party, for example. There are leaders who are saying, go get vaccinated, but there are also leaders, excuse me, who are saying no. And that's going to be, continue to be a problem. As we are seeing it now, with the spikes in selected parts of the country.
We're talking to Vish Viswanath, professor of health communication at the Harvard School of Public Health, looking at COVID-19 misinformation online and offline. The Surgeon General's office is calling this an urgent public health threat of misinformation. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions. Best way to reach us right now appears to be email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Phone lines are blipping a little bit. You can still try at 800-642-1234. Knock on wood and cross your fingers. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk now with Vish Viswanath, professor of health communication at the Harvard School of Public Health. We're looking at the COVID-19 misinformation that's out there online in particular after the U.S. Surgeon General said social media platforms should do more to find it and take it down. You can email your thoughts, ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Phone lines still pending. Sorry if you've tried to call and found nothing waiting for you. But the number when it comes back is 800-642-1234. Again, email ideas@WPR.org. Vish, one challenge all along with COVID-19 was that this was a new virus for us humans, and we were trying to figure it out as we went, and our understanding of it changed over time. What are some of the key elements for health communication when you've got this moving target where science is trying to keep up with it?
I think if nothing else, this is one of the biggest challenges we are facing, right? So if you go back 16 months ago in January of 2020, when we were just hearing about this, about some virus, some things happening in China. In fact, I was in India in January being interviewed by a reporter, and you know, we didn't know anything, you know, at the time. And as we, you know, 16 months later, here we are trying to figure out, and we still don't know much, right? You know, we know a lot, but we also don't know a lot, as we are seeing. So when people, you know, are hearing these messages and information on it, they are looking for certainty, and they are looking to scientists, they are looking to political leaders, they are looking to the healthcare system and saying that give us some information that is in black and white. But the science is changing, so the nature of facts change, and therefore the recommendations are changing, right? You know, first we said don't wear face masks, you know, leave them for healthcare providers. And now then we said, well, go ahead and get face masks because everybody needs it. So I think people are frustrated. People always wonder why the scientists can't make up their mind and give, you know, stick to one set of recommendations. Rob, this happens in every subject. You know, if you take heart disease, about cholesterol, about eggs, if you recall, you know. But those recommendations change over a period of time. But we have never seen anything like this in such a compressed period of time. So, excuse me. So thanks to our investment in scientific enterprise, we learned a tremendous amount of information. But we learned all of it in a very short period of 16 months. And that has made it very difficult, I think, because as the knowledge changed, our recommendations changed. And because they change in such a fast-paced way, in such a short time, people are frustrated about it. The second thing one should remember in this evolution of science, scientific knowledge, is our recommendations affected people directly. It's not about giving them an option on should they eat eggs or not because of cholesterol. It is about don't go to school, don't send your children to school. Don't go to work, maintain physical distance, you know, wear a face mask all the time, you know, stop, you know, shelter in place in some cases. And that has, I think, you know, because of the disruption in people's lives, I think, you know, that has made it even more difficult. So this has been, you know, I often say this, this is not only a failure in our public health preparedness, this is also a kind of a failure in science communication. We have not been, we have somehow not been able to be ready to communicate science in such a difficult situation, especially when the science is evolving so fast. And of course, as the Surgeon General said, the velocity and the volume of the spread of information has, you know, because of social media, has made it even tougher.
Let's bring on a caller now on our now functioning phone lines. Heidi is with us in La Crosse. Heidi, hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I'm really concerned about, like, who is fact-checking the fact-checkers, because early on in this pandemic, I did a lot of research, and I found that all my sources were saying there was a very good chance that this came from the Wuhan lab. And when I posted that on Facebook, I was immediately censored. Yet now, that's coming out that is most likely the case. And there's also Dr. Astrid Stuckelberger. She's a whistleblower. She used to be on the ethics committee or board for the WHO, the World Health Organization. She's saying that the WHO is not even following their own policies in what they're doing right now.
And Heidi, thanks for the call. And I'll fact check that. I mean, the vaccine lab leak is still an open question, but not, I don't think, seen as the most likely alternative here, Vish. But her main question, I think, is really interesting. How do we know we can trust the fact checking that we get, whether it's a social media platform or media outlet or you name it?
It is absolutely an important question, I think. And my argument, my suggestion would be, you know, look at the credentials of the people. What is their level of expertise? Because at the end of the day, we want to go to experts, who study this day in and day out. What is their financial interest and motivation in providing this information? What is their track record? What is the track record they have? And if you ask these questions, I'm not suggesting that you should believe everything that is out there, whatever the organization is, but look at the track record, look at their expertise, look at their interests and motivations. And in general, if you ask those questions, we don't buy a car or anything without checking first, right? It's the same thing with information. Do check them. Do look at these motivations. Do look at interests and track record and expertise. And you should be able to arrive at some principles or rules of thumb in believing or not believing some information.
Heidi, thanks for that call. Vish, just in our last few minutes, Boris emailed to say, what are proven ways to talk to vaccination skeptics that can help convince facts appear not to work? Can you leave us in just our last half a minute with an idea of a convincing message?
Right. One thing you don't want to do is label people, I never call them anti-vaxxers or all those labels. Those are not very helpful. I think we need to focus on people who are skeptical and try to understand where they are coming from. Most of it is not because of science, but because of what they have heard. They have, some of them have been misled because through emotional stories. And I think we have to appreciate where they are coming from, where those fears are coming from, and work with those fears and addressing them and assuring them, and work with people they know and trust. That is the best way to do it. And there is a small group of people who can never be convinced, and that is the way it is. But a large number of people can be convinced, but work with them and converse with them, engage them rather than scold them or label them.
And Vish, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Vish Viswanath is a professor of health communication at Harvard University's School of Public Health.